Good afternoon, America. Welcome to Mark Levine's Inside Scoop on Washington, where we bring you all the news from the nation's capital that the government does not want you to know. Yesterday, we talked about the death of the Republican moderate, how it is that the Republican Party, both in Congress and in the administration, is busy weeding out their moderates, making sure they have no power, making sure that they only comply with the conservative right-wing agenda. In the House of Representatives, now members of Congress are not even allowed to read bills, as we've learned from the omnibus $388 billion legislation that was passed with just a few hours to look over its 3,646 pages. And indeed, Republicans in the House are not even allowed to have a recorded vote on whether their fearless leader, Tom DeLay, can continue to lead them, even if he's indicted for a felony, based on the corporate contributions he received in the Texas gerrymandering scheme. In the Senate, you have Senator Arlen Specter from the blue state of Pennsylvania, who had the temerity to suggest that he might want to advise and consent on the president's judicial picks, as he's allowed under the Constitution, for that crime, for saying that, of course, he was forced to recant, forced to say that, no, he will accept all of Bush's judicial picks, whoever they are, whatever they may believe in, and he will accept them before they're even picked. In the administration, we saw, even before now, moderates like Treasury Secretary Paul O'Neill or Environmental Protection Secretary Christine Ton Whitman being forced out because of their moderate views, and Colin Powell is the next and perhaps the most famous so-called moderate in the administration to be walking out the door. But in the case of Attorney General John Ashcroft, who is being replaced, if the president has his wishes, by his present White House counsel, Alberto Gonzalez, some say that they're replacing a right-wing conservative for a moderate Republican. And I want to discuss this hour both the legacy of Attorney General John Ashcroft, why it is that he is one of the most controversial attorney generals in American history, what did he do, right and wrong, and also want to discuss this new guy that George Bush wants to become the next attorney general, Alberto Gonzalez. What is his background? Why is it that he's a guy who's controversial both to liberals and to right-wing conservatives? And to help me sort out this mess, I have a special guest today. His name is Mark Agras. He works for the Center for American Progress, which is a new liberal think tank in Washington, D.C. And I happen to know Mark quite well because he and I worked together in Congress. Mark Agras used to be chief of staff for Congressman William Delahunt, who represents the eastern tip of Massachusetts. And as we both worked for Massachusetts congressmen, we had plenty of opportunity, he and I, to work together on a number of issues. And I can assure you that he's quite capable of addressing these questions. He's a very intelligent, very good guest. And I want you to call in and impose your questions to him, because I think he can give you some very good responses. All you have to do is call in toll-free 877-57-SCOOP. 877-57-SCOOP. If you want to discuss John Ashcroft, we're going to do that in the first half hour, and Alberto Gonzalez in the second half hour. But first, I want to welcome my guest, Mark Agras. Welcome to the Inside Scoop.
Thank you. It's great to be with you.
Well, I want to start, by a comment by a blogger who I think posed the issue very well. It's beyond Ashcroft. It's beyond Gonzalez. It's a very basic question, but I think it's an important one for our listeners to know. And he asks, how much power does the attorney general have, and who is responsible for checking and balancing his power? I thought it was a great question because it really, what are we talking about here? What does the post of attorney general do?
Well, it is a good place to start, Mark. The attorney general is the chief law enforcement officer of the United States, and as such, he presides over the Department of Justice, which is a vast, far-flung enterprise that handles a whole wide range of matters, including federal crimes, the FBI's, civil matters of various kinds, including competition laws and wide range of consumer protection issues. And he is essentially the lawyer for the government, chief lawyer for the government, in all matters that come before the United States Supreme Court, matters that fall between one state and another state, or issues of federal law. And I think more importantly than that, he is the symbol in this country of the rule of law, which, of course, only works when you have an attorney general in place who is a believer in the rule of law and who abides abides by it himself.
Well, Mark, let me ask you the second question. If I could ask you to speak a little more directly into the phone so your voice doesn't fade out a bit. Nathan's second question is, who checks and balances him? And if we have a renegade attorney general, who watches to make sure he doesn't go too far?
Well, there aren't a lot of institutional safeguards in place other than, of course, the courts themselves. In this country, we can always bring the government to court if need be and seek relief when it does the wrong thing, and the Congress of the United States. Mark, as you and I both know, the Judiciary Committee in the House of Representatives and the Senate play a very important role in providing oversight over the Attorney General and all of the people who work for him.
Actually, Mark and I both had the experience of seeing Attorney General John Ashcroft live and in person several times appear before the committee that we both worked on. Mark, I want to ask you about the most controversial thing that John Ashcroft, I think it's fair to say, you can disagree with me if you would, but I think the most controversial thing people bring up time and time again is his enforcement of the Patriot Act. And I helped write that bill. I'd be the first to say that there's good parts in it and there are bad parts in it. It's not all bad, as some liberals say, and it's certainly not all good, as some conservatives say. But what is it that most concerned people about John Ashcroft and his enforcement of the Patriot Act?
Well, I think the overall concern is that before 9/11, he did little or nothing to respond to the known activities of international terrorists. And since 9/11, he's taken a series of steps, some of which arise out of the Patriot Act, and some of which have very little to do directly with the Patriot Act itself, that actually make the country less secure rather than more so.
Give me some examples of those, please.
Well, I think in place of sensible law enforcement steps and intelligence steps and immigration policies, he authorized hundreds of secret arrests and indefinite detentions of people without charge, without a lawyer, without trial. And he's also lifted some longstanding restrictions that protect the average American from unwarranted government surveillance. Some of this came out of the Patriot Act, but much of it did not. The detentions, for example, were not conducted under the Patriot Act, although the Patriot Act has provisions in it that would have authorized indefinite detentions up to a certain period of time. They actually haven't even had to use those provisions because they've relied on other existing laws having to do with the holding of material witnesses and various immigration laws that bear on people who are not lawfully present here, who could be picked up and held for long periods of time.
Well, one of the things that Ashcroft supported, and we'll cover it also when we talk about Alberto Gonzalez, is the idea that certain American citizens could be enemy combatants. And even if, for example, in the case of Jose Padilla, even if they're here in the United States of America, they're not fighting us on some foreign soil, they can be held indefinitely without trial, without charges even. I guess my question to you is this something that Ashcroft was behind, or do you think it was someone else? And do you think this kind of thing is unprecedented in American history, or given that, hey, we used to intern Japanese Americans in World War II, maybe this is something that's quite common to us?
Well, it's not common by any means, and we certainly, the internment of the Japanese Americans, there are other examples in American history. There was a rather infamous predecessor of Mr. Ashcroft during the Wilson administration, a gentleman by the name of Palmer, who was the Attorney General, Wilson administration, and authorized the rounding up of literally thousands of people, most of them immigrants, and mass deportations over some anarchist bombing scares that were occurring at that time. We had thought that the Palmer raids were the low point for constitutional democracy, but even Palmer did not claim the right to hold people who were American citizens apprehended on American soil, such as Mr. Padilla, and to hold them again for years without charge, without an opportunity to consult a lawyer. Only this attorney general has done that, and that's a lot to answer for, as the Supreme Court found.
I was just going to ask you about that. We have a very conservative Supreme Court, but even they seem to have wrapped Ashcroft on the knuckles for this.
Very seriously so, yes. The Supreme Court was united. In fact, one of the most conservative Supreme Court justices, Mr. Scalia, wanted to go even further than the court went and say that these people must be released forthwith if the government doesn't come. charges that it is ready to apply against them. So, yes, a very solid majority, a left-right majority on the court, said that this is not the kind of thing that ought to be happening in the greatest democracy in the world.
And just to be clear, this isn't a question of an ambiguous holding under a congressional statute. I mean, these are rights directly out of the Bill of Rights in the Constitution, are they not?
Well, that's right. These were constitutionally based decisions. The Attorney General had basically argued in his briefs, and of course all of this is public record, it's available to your listeners, he argued that the administration isn't subject to the law, that the courts essentially don't have jurisdiction to review these detentions. He also, as we now know, falsely represented to the court that the United States doesn't engage in torture or cruel and inhuman or degrading treatment in order to obtain information. Now, of course, know fully well, in fact, it's again on the front page of the Washington Post today, that the Red Cross has determined that there was torture going on at Guantanamo, again, that was officially denied by this government.
Now, Mark, do you think that John Ashcroft knew we were conducting the torture and lied about it, or is it fair to suggest that maybe he just didn't know and was saying what he thought to be true?
Well, obviously, one cannot look into his heart. And I don't claim to do that. What we can look at are his actions. He made representations to the court. Those representations presumably were based on some amount of what we lawyers call due diligence. He would have consulted with the Secretary of Defense, with the other responsible parties, to try to determine whether what he was saying to the court was the case. But Paul Clement, his then acting Solicitor General, argued the case and was asked point blank by the justices of the United States Supreme Court in open court whether the United States ever engages in this kind of conduct, and he said, we do not. And it was barely weeks later, in fact it was days later if I recall correctly, it was within a couple of days that the revelations about Abu Ghraib began to spill out. And of course, now again, we know what has gone on at Guantanamo also meets internationally recognized definitions of the practice of torture.
Let me give out the phone numbers again. It's toll free 877-57-SCOOP, 877-57-SCOOP. Mark Agress works for the Center for American Progress, where they study the records of Attorney General John Ashcroft and likely soon to be Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez. And here's your chance to ask him questions. As I said, Mark is an old friend of mine because we used to work together in Congress when we both served our bosses there. Mark, I want to ask you about some of the other, I guess they're less important, but they're certainly things that got a lot of attention, and that is some of the acts that Ashcroft took to enforce a certain morality, let's say, there at the Justice Department. One of his most famous was taking a statue of Justice, I believe it was Justice, correct me if I'm wrong, and she had naked breasts, and he covered those breasts so that they wouldn't be seen. Do you think that this was emblematic of something larger or just a silly controversy over a statue?
Well, I wish I could say it was merely a case of prudery in high places. But unfortunately, it is consistent with many of the actions that this Attorney General has taken in a number of areas. Certainly, when we talk about First Amendment freedoms, he has tried to chill expressive activity that's protected by the First Amendment. One example I can give you is the effort to bring frivolous actions against nonviolent protesters. The most famous or infamous example of that was the case against the Greenpeace protesters who were conducting a protest out on the high seas. And this got a lot of international attention, really another black eye for the United States, because court actually threw out the case and said that the United States had no jurisdiction here, that he couldn't understand why the Justice Department was even bringing this action.
Well, one of my listeners writes in that he's quite concerned about the government listening and watching on the Internet. And I happen to know, because I worked on the Patriot Act, that is within the realm of possibility. They can check and see where you go on the Internet. I guess part of the reason why I'm not as nervous as my listeners, because when I think of the trillions of times Americans go on the Internet, I feel like they can't possibly watch us all. Trying to find out what library books that we're reading. How much has government surveillance increased, and how can we even know if it's happening?
Well, the difficulty in answering the first part of that question is that the answer to the second part of the question is we can't. One of the provisions in the Patriot Act that is most disturbing is that it authorizes a number of law enforcement activities, including the so-called library book exception. It actually applies to almost anything, not just library books, but any kinds of records, business records, other records, anything in a tangible form can be seized by the government. And the most disturbing aspect of that is that neither the librarian, if it's a library, nor the person who is the subject of the investigation can be told whether that seizure is taking place.
And my understanding is that no one has to have any belief or probable cause to believe someone's committed a crime. They can still just investigate and watch what you're reading and watch where you're going on the Internet.
Yeah, the standard is extremely low. It does not meet anything like a probable cause standard. And so what it really does is it says, you know, the Justice Department has always claimed that they still have to get a warrant, they still have to get a court order, but that's really meaningless in this context because there is no situation one could think of in which any court would be justified in refusing to allow the surveillance.
We have to go to commercial break, but when we come back, I want to ask about the resignation that we've just heard today about Tom Ridge and whether the actions of John Ashcroft and Tom Ridge, as tough as they've been, maybe they've contributed to our safety. Republicans argue that that's why we haven't had an attack in the last four. I want to hear what Mark Agrest has to say about that, and I want to hear what you have to say. Call in during the commercial break, toll-free, 877-57-SCOOP, 877-57-SCOOP. We'll be right back with more of the Inside Scoop right after this.
George W. likes to live in his own world. In fact, being Bush seems like a joyful, almost dreamlike experience. Reality, for example, never intrudes into his consciousness. And his lies, even as big as whoppers, seem most sincerely to be believed by him. I have no doubt that he thinks he served in the National Guard, for example. For his second term, George is drawing his world even tighter, moving swiftly to eliminate advisors and officials who might tell him things he doesn't want to hear, further shielding him from bothersome realities in the world. Colin Powell was quickly ushered out the door, even though he had dutifully and unwittingly lied for Bush about those non-existent weapons of mass destruction. Powell was always questioning the blind rush into the war, so George has now plucked this irritant from his administration. Condi Rice, his worshipful national security advisor, has been moved into Powell's chair, and Bush can certainly trust that she won't disturb his consciousness with anything that goes against his neocon ideology. Gonzalez has been dispatched to head the Justice Department, where he can grind out memos to rationalize and legalize any little old thing that strikes George's noggin. Al, you might remember, is the guy who wrote the White House memo saying that torturing Iraqi prisoners was legally okie-dokie. Then there's the CIA, which kept sending intelligence reports to the White House warning that the Iraqi invasion and occupation would have messy consequences. George didn't like to hear that, so now he's put political hack Porter Goss at the CIA helm. Goss is purging top agents who have disagreed with Bush's disastrous policies, warning all CIA employees that their job is to, quote, support the administration and its policies in our work. This is Jim Hightower saying, there. Don't you feel better knowing that George won't be bothered by any unwanted advice or unpleasant reports?
If you've been thinking about consolidating your federal student loans, it's time to call College Loan Corporation at 1-800-2-COLLEGE. You'll quickly be connected to an expert loan consultant who will explain the benefits of the consolidation program, including locking in the lowest rate in history, reducing your current monthly payment by up to 58%, and cutting down multiple payments into one simple check. For more information, call 1-800-2-COLLEGE. That's 1-800-2-COLLEGE. It's the smartest call you can make.
This is a financial update. Average mortgage rates took a slight dip this week.
Sorry to interrupt, but LendingTree.com is the only place where banks compete over your mortgage. Then you get up to 4 real offers to choose from within minutes. So do better and choose from low rates. Call LendingTree now at 1-800-555-TREE. That's 1-800-555-TREE. When banks compete, you win at LendingTree.com. Equal housing opportunity. Some restrictions apply. See website for details and licensing.
Ready to play the numbers game?
Ready.
Okay. What could you buy for the cost of one stealth bomber?
Ooh, those are expensive. Could you build a new school?
You could build 110 of them. Or you could send 30,000 people to college for 4 years.
How much are those things?
$2.2 billion. That's more than the annual UN budget for famine relief.
Wait, we spend more on one airplane than the UN gets for famine relief?
Yeah. Sad, isn't it? Think about it. For more information, visit www.borgenproject.org. That's B-O-R-G-E-N project.org.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, former congressional attorney Mark Levine. We're discussing the imminent demise of John Ashcroft, who's leaving the Attorney General of the United States, and the guy that George Bush wants to replace him with. Presently, he's White House counsel Alberto Gonzalez. My guest is Mark Agrest with the Center for American Progress, and we're taking your calls at 877-57-SCOOP, 877-57-SCOOP. Caller, you're on the line with Mark Levine and Mark Agrest.
Hey, gentlemen, everybody that's ambulatory in Canada as we speak is showing up to express their total disgust for the gentleman that's visiting. I think both incoming and outgoing, the attorney generals are a part of a truly criminal, extremely corrupt administration. I think they are deliberately in the business of trying to grab all the wealth of the nation, maybe the world. I do not think that they are at all motivated by a concern for the people. I think it's a very deliberate thing.
Well, let me see what Mark thinks about that. Mark, how would you respond to that?
Well, Mark, I actually didn't hear the first part of the comment.
The caller's comment was that this is a very deliberate thing. It's a very deliberate thing by the administration, by both attorney generals, to really capture the wealth of the nation. And, Dave, did I express that fairly?
I'd say you did, yes, and I'd said that as we speak, if you missed the first part, everybody that's ambulatory in Canada is showing up to express their contempt for this administration.
Right. Yeah, he pointed out that Canadians are not big fans right now. What would you say, Mark? I mean, is it deliberate? What's going on here?
Well, I don't know. It's really not my business to question people's motives. I look at their behavior, and I think there's enough disturbing behavior that we can point to on many fronts by this attorney general and by this government to obviously give us great pause.
Anything else, caller?
No, thank you very much. I love your program. Oh.
Thanks very much for your call. Mark, I want to ask you the question that I started to ask before the commercial break, and that is that there's some that would say, look, you know, all right, maybe Ashcroft's gone a little far and maybe he needs to be reined in a little bit. But, you know, this made us safer. We haven't had any attacks in the last 4 years. Maybe we've got to round up some people. Maybe some Arabs, some Muslims need to be watched a little more carefully as to protect us, prevent us from another September 11th. How would you respond to someone like that?
Well, I'd respond by saying that obviously we're all very much relieved that we have not had another major attack in this country, and we hope that that will continue to be the case. But whether one can attribute that to the overzealous enforcement activities of this administration is highly doubtful. Look, there are, as you mentioned, there are parts of the Patriot Act that are perfectly legitimate and proper. There are also actions that this administration has taken that are perfectly appropriate responses to a threat of terrorism. I think we all take that threat very seriously, whether we're liberals or conservatives or whatever we may be. But it does not make us safer to engage in extreme actions beyond what the needs of the moment require. Let me give you an example. The harassment and detention of Arab Americans can only harm our ability to get the kind of information that many of the people in those communities, good and loyal Americans, would be prepared to provide if they don't feel that in doing so they will put themselves or their family members at risk.
So how would they be put at risk? You mean that John Ashcroft, if they provide the information, the Attorney General will imprison them? Explain that a little bit.
I think they've created a climate of fear and suspicion, which is not conducive to good, sound law enforcement. And there are a lot of good law enforcement officers on and off the record who will say so.
Let me ask you this. Why do you think John Ashcroft is going at this time? Do you think it has to do with his policies, or do you think it's personal or some combination?
Well, as you've seen, a lot of there's going to be a lot of turnover in this administration. I think there are a number of cabinet officers in particular, and Mr. Ashcroft is the top of the list, who have taken the heat for the administration's policies over the past 4 years. So I don't know what his personal reasons are for leaving, but it's not surprising that he has concluded that.
Hope history book in 2034. What will it say about Attorney General John Ashcroft?
Well, I'm afraid that most of what it will say is that this is a man who may or may not have started out with good intentions, but who was carried away by the power of the office and the fears of the moment, and engaged in excesses that, looking back on them, will seem to have been unfounded and improper.
We're going to go to another commercial break, and when we come back, we'll have a little bit longer than a half hour to talk about Alberto Gonzalez, the man that wants to replace John Ashcroft as Attorney General. Some conservatives say he's too liberal. Many liberals are concerned about his memos on torture. And a number of people say, you know, he's really just a yes man. He really does exactly what George Bush wants him to do, and that's the reason why he's being used to replace John Ashcroft. Whatever the case, we always welcome your calls. The toll-free number is 877-57-SCOOP, 877-57-SCOOP. Who is this guy, Alberto Gonzalez? Mark Agrest and I will be on to discuss him right after this.
Who was one of the biggest winners on November 2nd? Some bloke named Jerry Jones. He ran a $5 million ad blitz in Arlington, Texas, to win a vote that will put $325 million of government money into his own pocket. Jerry's the billionaire owner of the Dallas Cowboys, and the vote was to get taxpayers to build a luxury sports palace for his private business. He's just one of the billionaire sports owners across America who profess to love free enterprise, but shamelessly wallow in corporate welfare. Local politicians, eager to please these moneyed power brokers, back their billionaire boondoggles, even as basic needs in their cities go begging. Take New York City, where both Mayor Michael Bloomberg and Governor George Pataki have rushed to the aid of Robert Wood Johnson IV, known as Woody to his pals and political cronies. Woody is the heir to the Johnson & Johnson fortune, a backer of various far-right-wing causes, one of the top Republican donors in the country, and owner of the New York Jets. It's in this latter capacity that Woody, a fervent free enterpriser, wants a government handout. He says his team must have a new stadium to play in, and both Bloomberg and Pataki are there for him. They're offering $600 million from New York taxpayers to build poor Woody a privileged for-profit playground on a stretch of Manhattan's most valuable land. These are the same two political leaders who keep shortchanging New York school kids, claiming there's just no money to meet their needs. 94% of the city's schools have no athletic fields, and more than half have no playgrounds for the kids. Forget playgrounds. The kids' schools are dangerously dilapidated. Parents and teachers have to chip in to buy the most basic classroom supplies, and some school bathrooms don't even have toilet paper. This is Jim Hightower saying, here's a modest proposal. Not another dime in welfare for billionaires until every school is fully stocked with toilet paper.
Your dog eats your new sofa. Pet satisfaction rating 3%. Your hairdresser doesn't know burnt auburn from burnt toast. Hair color satisfaction rating 5%. After years of marriage, your husband still leaves the seat up. Spouse satisfaction rating minus 2%. Your car insurance company saves you hundreds of dollars and handles your claim quickly and fairly. Car insurance satisfaction rating 97%. Oh, you must have Geico.
His customer satisfaction stands at 97%. How would you rate your car insurance company? Geico. 1-800-947-AUTO.
It's night. You have heartburn. You want fast relief. Zantac works fast. When first used, Prilosec OTC works not so fast. Zantac works right when you need it.
Hello, relief.
Prilosec's label says it may take 1 to 4 days to fully work. So, what would you choose?
Estimated time of relief, 1 to 4 days.
Prilosec, nah. Zantac's for people who hate to wait, especially at night. Use as directed.
Ready to play the numbers game?
Ready.
How much do you think it would cost to end world hunger?
That is a big problem. $400 billion a year?
Nope, just $19 billion a year would end world hunger.
For less than 5% of our annual military budget, we could end world hunger?
Yes, if the political attention and funding that went into Iraq had gone toward poverty reduction, hunger could have been eliminated globally. Few fully realize the enormous expense of war. Nothing compares financially. Think about it. For more information, visit www.borgenproject.org. That's B-O-R-G-E-N project.org.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, former congressional attorney Mark Levine, talking with another former congressional attorney, Mark Agrest, currently works for the Center for American Progress, and we're talking about the lead lawyer in the United States, the one who's leaving, John Ashcroft, and now about the one that George Bush has appointed to replace him. Currently, he's White House counsel, and his name is Alberto Gonzalez. Now, he's a controversial guy on a number of fronts. Conservatives are still upset with him for an opinion he did back when he was on the Texas Supreme Court regarding parental notification for a girl under 18, actually she was 17, who wanted to have an abortion. Liberals are upset because he is known as the architect of George Bush's policy on torture. He's the guy who said the Geneva Conventions are quaint and somewhat archaic. And liberals are concerned that this is a guy who will do anything, including torture, to justify the president's policies. He's got quite an interesting past. He's an ex-lawyer for Enron. I first heard of Alberto Gonzalez, I remember, when I worked in Congress, because he was the guy who changed the law on presidential records. There used to be, well, there is a law, there's still a law that says that you have access to presidential records after so many years. The period, I believe, is 8 or 12 years. And I think it was 8 years, and we were about to look at the father, George Bush Sr.'s records, when Alberto Gonzalez came in with a very strange legal opinion that suggested that we couldn't see exactly what Bush the father had done. And I remember thinking at the time that that was a surprising reaction. If you want to call in and ask about Alberto Gonzalez, feel free to do. We always appreciate your calls. The toll-free number is 877-57-SCOOP, 877-57-SCOOP. Mark, I guess I want to ask you, first of all, has the Center for American Progress taken a position on Alberto Gonzalez?
Well, we have issued a statement, and you can find both our statement and some other supporting materials on the Gonzalez record on our website, which is www.americanprogress.org. And we have what will be a growing site there devoted to the Gonzalez nomination and indeed to other nominees who are controversial in the coming weeks. But we have not taken a position in support or in opposition to him, but we have raised some very serious questions, which we think need to be answered before the Senate acts to confirm this man.
Well, let's go through some of these questions. What do you think are the most serious?
I would say that there are three or four questions that are at the top of the list as to whether he is the right person to restore the honor and good name of the Department of Justice, restore the rule of law that has been so shaken during the years of the Ashcroft ascendancy at the department. But certainly the one you already mentioned in your remarks, condoning the use of torture, seeking to evade U.S. obligations under the Geneva Conventions, disregarding the constitutional rights of detainees, all in all, this is a man who appears to us to have contributed to a climate of disrespect for the rule of law, and a climate that's also, and I think this is particularly important, has placed American soldiers at greater risk. They rely on the Geneva Conventions for their own protection. And if the United States decides to flout those conventions, it is our men and women abroad who will suffer for it.
Well, let's start with the question of whether we're flouting those conventions at all. I've had conservatives on this program argue that George Bush doesn't condone torture. He said he doesn't condone torture. Why are you, you know, just because we got a few renegades at Abu Ghraib prison, why are you blaming the administration for this? Is there evidence that this indeed is not just a few lower-level soldiers getting ahead of themselves and that it, indeed this is national policy?
Well, unfortunately, it's the record is very clear on that because the various memoranda are now public record, including the August 2002 memo, which is, I think, the one you were referring to earlier, that was vetted by a number of officials and particularly by the chief counsel, Alberto Gonzalez. That memo actually issued a legal opinion that laws prohibiting torture do not apply to the president's detention and interrogation of enemy combatants.
Now, where does this come from?
This is not found anywhere in the law.
Yeah, I was just going to say, well, what's the legal basis? I mean, he's a lawyer. He's the top lawyer for the president. What was his legal basis for this opinion?
I'd have to say that it was sophistry. It was a very poorly drafted memo. It was clearly stretching to reach a certain preordained result. It said, for example, that torture should be defined very, very narrowly so that it would only apply where there's an injury such as death, organ failure, or serious impairment of bodily functions. Again, this is not found in any of the international agreements to which the United States is a party. This is made up out of whole cloth. And it's extremely disturbing, very disappointing, because it undermines the long-standing American role in upholding the rule of law both at home and abroad. It's such a very bad tone, and creates a climate in which it is not at all inconceivable that lower-level personnel would engage in the kinds of atrocities that have now been documented, not just at Abu Ghraib, but indeed at a number of other facilities in Iraq, at facilities in Afghanistan, and now most recently what many had feared at our facility in Guantanamo.
Let me just mention that I have an inside source. I've mentioned this on the air before, though it has not seen the mainstream press. I have an inside source in the Bush administration who tells me that there are about 2,000 separate individuals who have been killed in custody of the American prison, that we have killed some 2,000 individuals. Right now, only about 100-something have been reported by the Pentagon. They haven't given out the full numbers. My understanding is about 2,000 have been killed, and we may find this out later in the future.
Well, Mark, I think that's obviously a very shocking number. I don't have access to that particular information, but if it's true, I think it also indicates how damaging it is to have a government in which information is concealed, as it is in this administration. I think they've set all kinds of records for withholding access to information at all levels. And what that does is it undermines public confidence in the entire system of justice.
Now, Mark, every time I say exactly what you said on the air, that this is the most secretive administration, more secretive than Nixon, certainly the most secretive in my lifetime, I always get this response, they're all the same way. No president wants to tell, particularly about issues of war and terrorism and intelligence. They all want to keep it secret, and George Bush is no different from all the others. Are there concrete ways to measure how this administration is more secretive than others in the past?
Well, there is actually something called the Secrecy Index, which is maintained by one of the not-for-profit organizations. There's an organization called OpenTheGovernment.org, in which the Center for American Progress participates with a number of other non-governmental organizations. There, in fact, are all kinds of studies and reports that try to measure relative commitments to openness and relative secrecy. I wouldn't want to get into a discussion about whether this one is worse than the Nixon administration, which of course was notorious. But it's been a lot of years since the Nixon administration, and I don't think anybody would suggest that any of the subsequent administrations over the succeeding decades ever engaged in the kind of obsessive withholding of information that this this bunch have. May I give you one example?
Sure, please.
We just filed a brief yesterday with nine other organizations, including the leading library and archivists organizations in the country. In the case of Vice President Cheney, who has withheld even the names of the non-governmental organizations and individuals with whom he met back in 2001 when they were formulating the so-called National Energy Policy. They were conducting essentially secret, behind-closed-door discussions, but they were inviting in some special interest groups with an interest in the outcome of the energy policy. You mentioned Enron earlier. We still don't know who the players were. And there is a lawsuit that's been going on now for 3 years. It is now back in the Federal Court of Appeals in Washington, D.C. It's going to be argued on January 27th, and the briefs were due yesterday. And essentially the question is the public entitled to know, even there where there's no question of terrorism, whether the government had been giving privileged access to industry players who have an interest in the outcome of those discussions.
Now, Alberto Gonzalez, of course, as I mentioned, used to be an attorney for the main law firm that represented Enron. Is there any evidence that he, Alberto Gonzalez, had any role in the secrecy decision to withhold documents about who met with Dick Cheney at the Energy Commission?
Well, he was counsel. He, of course, is counsel to the president, not the vice president, who has his own counsel. So I think one of the things we need to know is what his role was in those kinds of crucial decisions and discussions. I don't have information as to what his personal involvement was, although it seems inconceivable given the high-profile nature of this dispute that's been going on now for 3 years through most of the administration. It's inconceivable to me that Mr. Gonzalez was not asked his opinion.
The toll-free number is 877-57-SCOOP. We appreciate your calls. 877-57-SCOOP. We're talking about Alberto Gonzalez, currently the White House counsel and the man that George Bush wants to appoint to replace Attorney General John Ashcroft. My guest is Mark Agras of the Center for American Progress. He and I used to work together as congressional attorneys, and he can take your calls to answer what you ask about Alberto Gonzalez. When we come back, I want to explore some of his past, because interestingly enough, Alberto Gonzalez, who's very controversial to those on the Democratic side of the aisle currently due to his secrecy and to his comments on torture, he has a past, both as counsel to George Bush, as governor of Texas, and also on the Texas Supreme Court, and some of those things actually make him controversial to conservatives. We're going to explore that question and take your calls right after these messages.
$400 billion on defense.
$400 billion is necessary to keep America safe.
Is it? For $120 billion, we could eliminate starvation and malnutrition, provide adequate shelter, retire developing nations' debt, remove landmines, eliminate nuclear weapons, provide refugee relief worldwide.
Those are the conditions that produce terrorism.
Exactly. Which course of action do you think makes America safer? Think about it. For more information, visit www.borgenproject.org.
Hear about it today on Hightower Radio. You do teach basic ethics to your children, don't you? You know, the difference between right and wrong. For example, I'm sure you teach them that if they get caught violating a family rule, they shouldn't suffer any consequences, but instead should simply be allowed to change that rule to fit their circumstance. Luckily, you can now hold up Tom DeLay as the role model for your children on this ethical twist. DeLay, the Republican majority leader, keeps smashing into our society's rules with his bullying techniques and constant grabs for more political power for himself and his party. Twice this year, he's been brought up on serious ethical violations, but in both cases, he managed to have his behavior reviewed by the toothless, gutless House Ethics Committee, rather than an outside independent investigator. So he got away with what amounts to Please don't do that again, Tom. But now, he faces the real possibility of his ethics being judged outside his own little playhouse. A Texas grand jury has already indicted three of his top aides for laundering illegal corporate campaign funds. And delay could be next. His legal problems aside, an indictment would cause a big political problem for Tom, since his own party's rules in Congress require that any leader who gets indicted must resign from the leadership post. But old Tom didn't get where he is by playing by anyone's fussy rules. So, in his words, he simply, quote, fixed the rules. As their very first order of business following the November election, the Republican House caucus dutifully acted to shield their leader by scrapping that pesky ethics rule that would have forced DeLay to step down. As a result, even if he is indicted, he'll still be up there as the House Majority Leader, an ethical model for all our nation's children. This is Jim Hightower saying, actually, having an indicted man as the poster boy of the House Republicans might just be a very appropriate symbol.
If you've been thinking about consolidating your federal student loans, it's time to call College Loan Corporation at 1-800-2-COLLEGE. You'll quickly be connected to an expert loan consultant who will explain the benefits of the consolidation program, including locking in the lowest rate in history, reducing your current monthly payment by up to 58%, and cutting down multiple payments into one simple check. For more information, call 1-800-2-COLLEGE. That's 1-800-2-COLLEGE. It's the smartest call you can make.
One in four adults has high blood pressure. If you're one of them and you have a cold, Coricidin HBP has surprising news for you. The American Heart Association recognizes that decongestants found in many leading cold medicines can raise your blood pressure and interfere with blood pressure medication. So why risk it? Only decongestant-free Coricidin HBP provides a line of safe, powerful cold and flu medication specially formulated for people with high blood pressure. So make the safe choice. Coricidin HBP. Use as directed.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, former congressional attorney Mark Levine. My guest is Mark Agrest, also a former congressional attorney. Currently, he now works for the Center for American Progress. And our topic is Alberto Gonzalez. Who is this guy? Why has he been chosen by George Bush to replace John Ashcroft as Attorney General? And what is his past? What can we learn from his past actions? One of the things I found interesting in researching Gonzalez's past is the whole question of his ethnicity. Republicans are always complaining that Democrats believe in this identity politics and taking care of the concerns of black people and Latinos and Asians and all the different parts of the Democratic coalition. And yet, in fact, George W. Bush said in Texas in 1997 when he appointed Alberto Gonzalez to be on the Supreme Court of Texas, he was asked whether his ethnicity matters. And George W. Bush responded quite honestly, got to give him credit for it. He said, of course his ethnicity matters. This is, in fact, something that the president is quite openly doing to court the Latino vote. And I don't know that there's anything wrong with that. I don't know if you disagree. Call in toll-free 877-57-SCOOP. But I do think it's worth pointing out George Bush Sr. never admitted what everyone thought to be true, that Clarence Thomas was chosen for his race. After all, he wasn't a particularly distinguished jurist. And I don't know, Mark, if you have any comment on the fact that George W. Bush, at least back in Texas, admitted that Alberto Gonzalez's ethnicity was one reason for the choice.
Well, I actually don't take him to task for choosing a Latino to be the top law enforcement officer. I would like it to be a person of distinction and merit, whatever his race, whatever his ethnicity. I think this is one of the areas where Mr. Bush has done a relatively good job at diversifying his administration at the top levels. But we've got to look now at whether this particular individual is qualified to be the top law enforcement officer in this country.
Well, let me go back, because I've been researching some of the things that he did in Texas, including some really obscure stuff. For example, in June 1997, apparently he wrote a memo on a treaty, the Vienna Convention on Consular Relations. And what he said was in this memo, and this one really amazed me, was that because the state of Texas didn't sign this particular treaty, that it didn't have to abide by the treaty, and in fact it could execute a Mexican national who had suggested that he had rights under the treaty. In essence, what Gonzalez was saying, I guess, is that Texas didn't have to follow the Constitution, which says that treaties are the law of the land. I don't know if you're aware of that particular decision, Mark, but it seems to me that this is something that where he's really going out on a limb here.
I think that particular issue has continued to haunt him because the issue of the Vienna Convention is simply whether a foreign national who is arrested in this country has a right to have access to his embassy or his consulate at the time of the arrest. And this has arisen in a series of death penalty cases, particularly in Texas, which is, after all, the death penalty capital of the United States, where they have in fact denied access to foreign nationals as required by this treaty, which the United States has always previously honored. That has caused a great deal of consternation abroad, and in fact it's undermined the war against terrorism in a number of ways, including by discouraging other countries from extraditing people to the United States to stand trial. Most of the European nations, for example, have laws that prohibit the extradition of potential suspects to any country, including the United States, in which they are likely to be executed. So it doesn't serve our purposes to be engaging in this kind of conduct.
In other words, if someone commits a murder in the United States and then skips town, runs abroad or maybe is a foreign national and goes abroad, we can't even get that person back to punish them for life imprisonment,
right?
Because the countries don't want to ship him here or here or here. It's usually him because of the fear of the death penalty. Is that right?
That's right. They're actually prohibited by their own laws from doing so. And so we've had to enter into agreements with those countries that if extradited individuals are returned here, that they will not face the death penalty, that in effect they will face a maximum penalty of life in prison without a possibility of parole.
Let me continue this question of the death penalty here, because certainly the majority of Americans support the death penalty. It is common in Texas. But one of the things that Gonzalez was criticized for was his execution summaries. George
Yes.
Bush would spend a few minutes reading them. Maybe you can tell us about those.
Mm-hmm. Well, in particular, the clemency petitions that would go to the governor. Every governor has the power to commute sentences or to provide clemency where he thinks that a wrong has been done or an excessive punishment has been imposed, and the governor of Texas is no exception. So it is customary for the counsel to the governor to write a memorandum detailing the facts of each case, particularly the death penalty cases. And then the governor is supposed to review those memoranda and perhaps also review the other records themselves. Now, I don't know whether more of the blame here belongs to then-Governor Bush or to his lawyer, Mr. Gonzalez, but you look at the care and attention that most governors give to this very serious process. They will spend hours, they will spend days, they will spend longer trying to determine whether this is a situation in which they should use their power of clemency. That was not done by Governor Bush and Counsel Gonzalez. They appear to have spent very little time going through these things. The memoranda are, in most cases, quite cursory. They omit essential facts or give them very short shrift. I'll give you one example among many. There was a death row inmate by the name of Terry Washington, who was a man in his 30s who was mentally retarded. He had the communication skills of a child. That case, that death case, merited all of a three-page summary from Mr. Gonzalez to Governor Bush, and made virtually no reference to the facts that this man had mental incapacity, that he had not had a proper defense, that he had been subject to beatings and terrible torture when he was a child, that this was really not a competent person at all. That there'd been no testimony by a mental health expert. I mean, a lot of things you'd expect would be considered in mitigation of a death sentence.
And was he executed, in fact?
I believe that the execution was carried out.
That's
a great question. I'm not actually sure.
Actually, my understanding is he was executed, but that the Supreme Court subsequently, after he's dead a little late, said that we can't execute those that are mentally ill. I do want to turn in last question, because we've talked about all the reasons why someone, a Democrat, might be opposed to Alberto Gonzalez. Interestingly, there's one reason why a lot of conservatives are very upset with Alberto Gonzalez, and it has to do with an opinion he gave on the Texas Supreme Court regarding parental notification for abortion. There was a Texas law that said that a woman who is mature and sufficiently well-informed did not have to notify her parents. Any other woman had to notify her parents, but if she could demonstrate to a judge that, in fact, she was mature and sufficiently well-informed, then she could have an abortion without notifying her parents. And a 17-year-old girl went and told the judge that her parents were against abortion, and in other words, demonstrated to the lower court judge she was mature, sufficiently well-informed. And Alberto Gonzalez upheld that principle. He said, in effect, that he may be pro-life. I think he hinted at that he may be against abortion, but he's got to uphold the law as written. And in doing so, he's made a lot of conservatives upset. Do you have any views on this?
Well, certainly, I have to say, I think he was right on the merits. But what's more interesting and important is that he did apparently choose to apply the law, even though it would have been it created difficulties for him. So, from what I know of that case, I think that's a very welcome contrast with current Attorney General Mr. Ashcroft, who has been doing everything he can to undermine reproductive rights and the federal laws that protect reproductive rights. You know, he's undermined the doctor-patient privilege. He's tried to obtain confidential patient medical records. I would hope that what this means is that if he's confirmed, Mr. Gonzalez would not follow that course, but in fact would follow the law in this and we hope in other areas.
But I guess, Mark, maybe it points out the difference between a judge, of course he was a Texas Supreme Court judge when he rendered that opinion, and an attorney general. An attorney general, of course, works for the president. He's got to do what the president says or he can be shown the door. A judge has more leeway. Maybe the case is Alberto Gonzalez might be a better judge under the law than attorney general. After all, it's his attorney general, not his attorney general, but his White House counsel that he drafted these memos on torture as governor's counsel on Texas when he said that Texas doesn't have to follow basic conventions. Maybe he's to be more trusted in a judicial role than an attorney general role. What would you say?
Well, Mark, of course, I think you know he's been under consideration for the Supreme Court. So that may well come to pass, whether or not he's confirmed as Attorney General. But be that as it may, I would argue that the same qualities of integrity and attention to the law are required in both roles. The Attorney General is not a counsel to the President, which is his present role. He should not be a yes man for what the President wants to do. His job is to say, this is what the law requires. And he is the chief law enforcement officer of the United States and should take that responsibility very seriously, even if it means that he has to break with his president. That has happened in the past. We talked earlier about the Nixon administration, and I think everybody will recall what was known as the Saturday Night Massacre, in which the president made a demand on his attorney general. The attorney general refused to comply and was fired. And then the assistant attorney general refused to comply and was fired. And it was only the solicitor general, the third-ranking guy in the department, a then little-known fellow by the name of Robert Bork, who agreed to carry out the deed.
Well, we only have a few seconds left, Mark. Let me just ask you one last question, and that's a prediction. Do you think that Gonzalez will be easily confirmed?
Well, I think it's likely that he'll be confirmed. Whether it goes easily or not really does depend on the hearings. And what we're focused on is trying to make sure that those hearings give a full and fair opportunity to sort out his record and to determine whether he's the sort of man who should be in a position of that responsibility.
Mark, I want to thank you very much for taking your time out this hour and coming here on the Inside Scoop. I do appreciate it.
Pleasure to be with you, Mark.
Tomorrow we're going to talk about the basic question that some have raised. Is the United States a Christian nation? This is something that's gotten quite a lot of controversy on the blog. They're already